The measure of a healthy society is how well it treats its most vulnerable. The report you're hearing about in the news, Too Hard, Highly Vulnerable Teens in Tasmania, shows us that we have got a long way to go in Tasmania with an already suffering child protection system, which is lots of stuff on the news about that last night. Interstate providers taking profits, young children not being looked after. What about teens? Meg Webb is the manager of Social Action and Research Centre at Anglicare, who oversaw this report. Hi, Meg.
Hi there, Rick.
As you read this report, what was your response?
As I read this report, I felt absolutely gutted, to be honest. I've worked in the community sector for 16, 17 years now, and some of the stories and some of the pictures that come from this work about the lives of young people, children actually, we're talking about children here from the age of 10, are just horrifying. Actually, and they're not things you expect to hear in a society here in Tassie, where a lot of us are, we're doing okay, life's pretty good, but for these kids, it's not.
Because it's so much first-person experience, it's a shadow world of children, some of whom whose births aren't even registered, who are living with no supervision from the age of 10 or 12.
Just to be clear, these kids are living in a real wide variety of circumstances. The thing about it is it's very precarious. Sometimes they're still at home at times. Other times they might be couch surfing. Other times they might be in really insecure accommodation, squats, inappropriate sort of housing in dangerous circumstances. What tends to be the case is that that picture is changing and they're just having to survive day to day in whatever circumstances they find themselves.
In this research, you spoke to the children, but you also spoke to how many service providers?
So our researcher, Catherine Robinson, spoke to 16 young people and about 35 service providers, and they were people from government agencies and services and also the non-government sector. She got a really broad picture from all the services that at different times would touch on the lives of these kids who we think of as these highly vulnerable teens.
But do these children really access those services? Are they aware of them?
They tend to bounce around quite a lot. So what we found as a really key part of this research was that everybody's trying to do their best, and there's some wonderful, wonderful people out there in the government and the non-government sector who are doing their job in the little slice that they have in terms of contact with these kids, and they're doing their best, but they've got limited capacity to interact and make a difference in their lives. And what happens is the kids tend to be referred and then referred and then referred, little bits and bobs. And as you say, it can be pretty hard for a young person in really insecure and difficult circumstances to access a service and to keep accessing it in a way that makes a difference.
There's one example here where there's someone saying, I've got a child begging to get them into Ashley so they'll have support.
How horrifying is that? That for some kids in our community, perhaps the best option for care we've got is to incarcerate them.
But that's the child themselves asking for that.
Yeah. See, in Ashley, I guess what that child may know is that they'll be fed, they'll have a warm roof over their heads, they'll have people who are paying attention to them and caring to some extent. Now, that's just not okay that we can't offer that to our young people, to our 11, our 12, our 13-year-olds, without incarcerating them.
Clearly, a 12 or 13-year-old child who has lived like that, or even a 15-year-old child, isn't going to sit in a foster home necessarily or in a family home very easily.
This is a very challenging area to be looking at. What we would have seen with it, most of the kids that are covered in this report and the group that we're talking about, is that they would have had repeated notifications to child protection through their lives. And we chose to look at kids who weren't currently under child protection orders. So they were not in the out-of-home care system. And often that's because we don't have good options to offer them in that system. As you say, a regular foster placement probably is not going to work in this circumstance. These are kids who've experienced cumulative trauma through their lives. It is going to be difficult to offer them the support they need, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't be doing it.
Are they angry? These kids, are they in the research saying we feel completely let down, or do they just go, oh, this is life, is it? This is how it is?
Look, It's interesting talking to my colleagues in Anglicare who work directly with these kids. The things that they say, that they hear from the kids all the time, is that these kids just want to be normal. They want to do normal things. They want to have a home. They want to go to school. They want to have friends. They want to be normal.
They don't want to be living in a party house forced to have sex and take drugs. And
absolutely,
these are the stories that are in this
not.
Report. You're listening to Meg Webb, Manager of Social Action and Research Centre at Anglicare, who commissioned this report that you're hearing about today, Too Hard, Highly Vulnerable Teens in Tasmania. So you say all these services, everyone's doing their best and they're trying to do what they can, but it sounds like that no one in society is responsible for these children.
We've got fragments, I guess, is the situation. And those fragments are doing their best and in some cases doing great work, but it doesn't
But who's
actually,
responsible?
Exactly, who's responsible? What we've identified as being needed, and remember we're talking about children here, we're talking about 11, 12, 13-year-olds, what we need is a service that holds them, that actually provides their fundamental care in a way, a consistent way over a period of time that's based on a relationship, that's based on them knowing that there's a person there who cares about them, who'll stick with them, who won't abandon them, and all those things that they've experienced already in their life. And we need that kind of care available readily to this cohort of kids, and we need it to be long-term because with that foundation of a long-term relationship-based care, what we can then do is much more effectively link them into the specialist services and support they might need. They might need mental health services. They might need specialist drug and alcohol services. They might need alternative education options. But they need the fundamental care, that day-to-day, you know, really basic stuff. They need that first.
How many children do you think? In Tassie?
This is a really tricky question, Rick. We can pick out numbers and say there's this many in the youth justice system, there's this many who access specialist homelessness services, this many in child protection, but it's a hard picture to put together to know for sure. What we would say is there's enough of them that we see them regularly through all our different service systems and we know we're not catering to their need. And most of the systems that interact with them are at capacity. So the need is there, it's not being met. And for these kids, it's an incredibly vulnerable time in their lives. So we're paying the price for that ultimately as well.
And then once children are 18, even if they have been supported in the system, then they're often not supported after that, which becomes another problem.
Indeed.
So looking longer term at children who grow up outside of any kind of systems, where do they end up? Is it a one-way road to Risdon prison? Is it a one-way road to death?
Look at that. That's unfortunately the reality for a lot of these kids. What we're talking about is kids who are living in highly dangerous and vulnerable circumstances. Many of them are going to have behaviours and difficulties that are going to land them in prison. They're going to be undertaking risky behaviour. Many of them commit suicide, Rick, because life is just too tough in the end when you've had your whole childhood consumed in this way.
Normally we keep breakfast pretty cheerful, but this is such an important issue in our community to look at and face. So what can be done? We see on the news child protection is a mess. The staff don't trust the system. They don't even feel they can work through that. Where to from here? What does Jackie Petrusma, what does the minister, what does government need to be doing?
I think first and foremost, we have to accept child protection won't be able to do everything. So yes, there's absolutely improvements that need to be made in child protection and we absolutely want to see them respond much better to older children. Not at the expense of younger children, but in addition to that. But I guess really the thing the report highlights is the fragmented nature of the services here. We want a strategic approach to this, put a foundation in those foundational services and then fill the gaps that are there in the specialist services. And I guess we had hoped to look to the youth at risk strategy, which came out last month, to provide and point a way forward with this. But what we would observe is while there's some good elements in that strategy, it actually just continues that fragmented approach. It doesn't provide that foundation necessary, that strategic, holistic look at the problem. So we hope to work more and talk more with the government about how we might bring that holistic and strategic approach to this.
Well, it sounds like the services are as chaotic, fragmented and disorganised as the lives that the children are experiencing. They can't offer a service in that. Anyway, you launched today at 11. We'll see what happens from there. A conversation will keep happening. Meg, good to talk to you this
Thanks
morning.
Thanks very much, Rick.